This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Encourage people to be active participants in their mental health as much as they are active participants in their physical health.
What is the behavior that happened? And once you can identify the behavior, you can move forward in the problem-solving process.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the ADHD Eavesdrop, where you can be a butterfly on the wall and listen in on my conversations. And who am I? I'm Janine Van Stee. I'm an ADHD life coach who likes to help people better manage their ADHD symptoms and live the best lives that they can. Today on the show, we have my daughter, Savannah, again, and we're going to be talking about comorbidities and things that are associated with ADHD that not a lot of people may talk about. Yeah. Hi, Sam. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing great. I have to say, we do need to clear up that you are Sam and you are Savannah.
I'm Sam. I'm Savannah. I'm Sav. It really depends on who you ask.
Exactly. Anyway, so comorbidities, you don't have any of those, do you?
No, not at all. Not even a single one. Never even heard of that. What do you mean?
Mm-hmm. When we talk about comorbidities, what are we talking about?
So the way I like to think about a comorbidity is that it is something that exists at the same time as something else, but they are not existing because of each other. So like a lot of the time you'll see depression and anxiety together, and they can cause each other, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they do cause each other. So with ADHD, there are a lot of comorbidities, like you can have ADHD and be more susceptible to thyroid disorders. I have one of those. Or you can have ADHD and be more susceptible to anxiety and depression and personality disorders. Recently learned a lot about those.
Well, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, mostly what I learned is that personality disorders are way more common than we realize. 1 in 8 people has a personality disorder. They're actually more common than anxiety disorders, depression disorders. They're more common than pretty much any other mental health disorder. And they exist in a completely different category than other mental health disorders. Personality disorders are purely neurological and genetic. They live in their own kind of category. But it is shown more people with ADHD, autism, and substance use disorders will also have a personality disorder. It used to be that people thought they were caused by trauma, but they're actually, you can see signs of a personality disorder as early as age 5 in an individual.
Well, in some like documentaries and stuff I've seen on some kids, pretty young can start exhibiting, like even before 5, but you know, mm-hmm. like 5 is kind of that stage where they can say, yeah, we're really exhibiting something here. So mm-hmm. what are some different personality disorders? What are, because you said there's how many?
Oh, there's so many. I don't know how many.
What are some of the most common ones that we see?
One right off the top of the head that a lot of people hear about is antisocial personality disorder. That is your garden variety sociopath. It's an outdated term, sociopath is, but that's when people think of sociopath, they think of a person with antisocial personality disorder. People with personality disorders in general don't experience emotions in the same way. So specifically with antisocial personality disorder, they don't really experience empathy. And so a lot of times people with personality disorders will make a person without a personality disorder feel kind of crazy. Like, they make you feel out of character. They make you feel like you're losing it because they make you want to act crazy too.
So it's that sounds like a narcissist.
That's a personality disorder. Actually, narcissism is a personality disorder. So like, they'll make you feel like you're going to act out of character because a lot of the times they're labeled not as sick or not as mentally ill. They're labeled as rude or a jerk or that guy's just an asshole, when really he has a personality disorder, likely narcissistic personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder. The thing is with these personality disorders specifically is that they're not being mean, because being mean implies intention, and they don't really intend to do anything. They just act. They're pure ego. They just act on impulse. And maybe that has something to do too, because you think like people with ADHD have a lot of impulsivity. So that kind of plays in there too.
So then they make you feel crazy because they're like, I don't see a problem here.
Yeah, because they're acting like a total jerk and you're trying to get them to stop acting like a jerk. And they get stuck. Specifically, what they say is they get stuck at this point or some point in the problem solving process. There are 6 steps to the problem solving process. The first step is identifying the problem. The second step is discussing the problem in behavioral terms instead of conceptual terms. So a lot of the times, that's where a lot of people get stuck, is they will tell you, well, they were mean to me. They made me feel invalidated. They made me feel less than. And that is a conceptual sort of term, right? The way they made you feel. Where we come in as mental health professionals and practitioners is helping them reframe that and asking them, what is it that they specifically did to make you feel that way? What is the behavior that happened? And once you can identify the behavior, you can move forward in the problem-solving process. And that involves things like, you know, identifying possible actions that you can take, evaluating those actions, trying them, and then seeing whether or not they work, and then reevaluating. And, you know, the problem solving process is kind of ongoing, but I think where a lot of people get stuck is the conceptual part of it. They just think in this term of, well, they made me feel this way. And specifically, that's where people with personality disorders get stuck a lot, is conceptualizing as opposed to thinking in behavioral terms. Once you think about it logically and scientifically, it removes the drama from the situation. And it makes it easier to actually get somewhere and begin problem solving.
So this could be a real problem in a couple.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You get 2 people with a personality disorder in there, that's going to be heavy. And so, especially now you know how common they are. You see, you sometimes see people who it's like, wow, you just really can't communicate, and it's like, well, they might have a personality disorder, who knows, you know?
So we've got narcissism, we've got antisocial.
Mm-hmm.
What other personalities?
Avoidant personality disorder is actually, so of course, you know, when I learned all this about personality disorders and learned that they can be linked to with ADHD, I was like, okay, so what personality disorder do I have? So I looked it up, a list of them, and avoidant personality disorder is someone who tends to believe that, first of all, they tend to avoid others. They tend to believe that they are less than everyone else. They tend to believe that everyone hates them. I wish I had the list in front of me, because I can't remember off the top of my head, but that was the one that I self-diagnosed myself with.
And you know, that sounds a lot like RSD.
Yes, that's what I thought too. And that's that's exactly what I thought when I read it, because I was like, well, that's not a personality disorder. That's just rejection sensitivity dysphoria. And I was like, well, they could be very similar.
And comorbid.
comorbid, yes. There are so many others too. There's the schizoaffective, schizoid, schizoid personality disorder, specifically people who have magical thinking, which is like, if I do X, why will happen. Like, they think that they can control things. They will sometimes
beyond superstition, like, because I think if I wear my jersey for the game, we're gonna win, because I always have to wear my Amun-Ra jersey for the game.
That's superstition. The magical thinking is more like, if I take this route every single day, I will become God.
Oh, that is very magical.
Yes, it is. It's very extreme, and frequently dangerous. So that's the schizoid affective disorder. Schizoaffective disorder is a little different. That's someone who prefers to be alone, tends to not pick up on social cues. I saw a lot of similarities with schizoaffective disorder and autism, actually. The difference, I think, is that empathy part and the desire to relate to others. People with the schizoaffective disorder don't generally desire to relate to others. They don't really care for other people at all. They're perfectly happy being by themselves forever and ever. I think people with autism generally still seek community, and borderline personality disorder is one that's talked about very frequently.
It's been brought up in my therapy before that I might have a borderline personality disorder.
No way, really?
Yeah.
Huh. So maybe you can tell me a little bit more about it.
Honestly, I don't know much about it.
Okay.
Because it was one of those things where it was like glazed over, and I was like, what, wait, what? And then we never talked about it again. And I really need to probably look into that a little bit more.
So that makes sense, because BPD, borderline personality disorder, is one of the more common personality disorders, I believe. And it's one of the more extreme ones. It's more common in women than it is in men. Just like narcissistic personality disorder is more common in men than in women. The things that I know based off of the people that I know and have interacted with in my life is they get very attached to one specific person. This is their favorite person. And everything that this person does is golden. And you can't tell them otherwise. There's nothing wrong with them. And as they put this person on a pedestal, and as soon as that person lets them down, it is the whole end of the world. And they feel their emotions so deeply.
So this is what it says on the Google.
Oh, thank you for pulling up the Google.
I pulled up the Google. It is a mental illness that affects the person's ability to manage their emotions, which can lead to instability in relationships, self-image, and other areas of life, including emotional instability, self-image issues, impulsive behavior, relationship instability, daily challenges, having trouble with daily tasks, obligations, and life events. Yeah,
so
it sounds like me.
Right. So, and I think a lot of people would read something like that and think that that would be relating to trauma. And I think it's important to note that while personality disorders are largely genetic and neurological, I can't, and I'm not going to say this is a fact, because I am not a professional, I am not a expert by any means, but I do believe that trauma can amplify a personality disorder. So you could be born with a personality disorder and it might really never show up, as long as you have a stable environment that you're living in and you learn how to cope with it. But if you're a person who's been traumatized your entire life, your personality disorder is probably going to show up quite a bit in a lot of areas of life.
Yeah, and when I read that definition or that description, I can't help but think that if I have ADHD and I had borderline personality disorder, if that was the case, boy, that just kind of like is a good wing dinger for my emotional stability.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I know. And I think
different times in my life, I've been more emotionally unstable or more stable. And I'm very stable now. But there were periods of my life where I was very emotionally unstable.
Yeah. And I was just thinking the same thing, because like, I also go through periods where it's like, wow, I am really just like a freaking wackadoodle. Like, you know, I look back on certain periods of my life where it's like, wow, I was really going through it and I didn't even realize. And then I come out of it and I'm pretty stable. And then I go back into it. And, you know, I think a lot of that for me is relating back to depression, because I remember Chicago I have to remember that Chicago is like almost 4 years
Chicago
ago.
is like a fever dream to me.
It is. It literally is. Like, I look back on it and I was like, wow, I was so wildly depressed while there for the first year that I barely remember that first year. And then the second year, I was working a job that was so incredibly challenging for everything that I exist with, and I was wildly under-medicated. I was going to therapy, but I didn't really like my therapist, and I was medicated, but not well. So I was kind of treating some of the stuff that I had going on, but not fully. It was a wild time in my life, to be sure. And I have to like look back on it. It's like, wow, that was really like almost 4 years ago now. Like
Yeah.
some it feels like it was yesterday, and it feels like it was like 10 years ago at the same time.
I mean, in all of these disorders, when you start talking about, I mean, you talk about ADHD, you talk about the personality disorders, and in a lot of ways, they sound very similar to each other. And the nuances that break them into independent things, those are the areas that a real live therapist or psychiatrist has to be able to pick apart, right? Which is, you said you had a therapist, but you didn't really like that therapist all that well. I've had, my therapist be like, is this ADHD? Is, what are we looking at here? Because it's very difficult to pick things apart and figure out what's what. Because if I'm dealing with this as if it's an ADHD issue and it's actually a personality disorder, then I could treat it differently.
Yeah. And I think too, it's important to recognize like one practitioner's diagnosis can be completely different from another practitioner's diagnosis. That was one of the things actually that I learned while I was living in Chicago is that diagnoses can mean relatively little. The one that I think about specifically, there was a woman that I worked with in Chicago, one of my clients. She was diagnosed with a
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Antisocial personality disorder. And when I first started working there, she was one of the first people that I met with. And my director at the time said, well, she has an antisocial personality disorder, but we don't really, agree with that too much. She doesn't display those traits as much as we think someone with an antisocial personality disorder would. At the time, she went by a different name. After working with her for about a year, she came out as trans, and a lot of those antisocial personality traits kind of slipped away. And it was kind of crazy to me that, like, masking and pretending to be someone that you're not, and all of that stuff might show up as one thing to one person and could be something completely different. Because as soon as she was able to be her true self, a lot of those antisocial personality traits that she was diagnosed with kind of slipped away. And we realized it wasn't really so much an antisocial personality disorder as much as it was gender dysphoria and, in general, a lot of masking.
Yeah, so and I say that because people are very quick to diagnose themselves with things, but you start looking at things and they all start looking similar, and then you start thinking, well, then I've got all of these things, and it's just you really have to be careful with that, because there are a lot of comorbidities with ADHD, but that doesn't mean that you have every one of them, right?
And that's why the DSM is so specific on like diagnosis criteria. And that's why you have to talk to a professional, you have to talk to a psychiatrist. someone who really knows what they're talking about, who would be able to spend that kind of time with you and be able to actually give you an accurate diagnosis after knowing you for more than like one session. That's one thing that I have with some practitioners is that they meet with you one time and they think that they can give you an accurate diagnosis after that first time. And that was a problem that I had with a lot of psychiatrists that I first met with when I came back to Michigan, was that my first psychiatrist thought my entire problem was my nightmares and depression. And he figured that if he could stop my nightmares, my depression would go away and I would be fine. And he was so stuck on that for months and nothing was getting better. I was prescribed trazodone. I was prescribed prazosin. Nothing worked. I was still having nightmares. They never bothered me that much, but he never really listened to me or cared what I thought about it. So then I switched to a different psychiatrist who thought my entire problem was my anxiety. And so she was going to treat my anxiety. And if she could treat my anxiety, we could treat everything else. And things eventually got so bad and I was so depressed that you actually made me go to a different psychiatrist because I was spiraling. I was just in such a horrible place. And then I started seeing a psychiatrist who is actually, like, she went to school for psychiatry. Like, this is what she wanted to do. She was a PhD. And she actually listens to me and takes what I think into consideration. She also knows our family, so she knows a bit about my family history, and that helps a lot, too.
The family psychiatrist, yes.
Yep, right. But she was the first one that really brought up OCD with me. And actually, the first one kind of did bring up OCD. He said that I might have OCD tendencies, and I hate tendencies because the first time I was tested for ADHD, I was told I had ADD tendencies. What the frick is that supposed to mean? Do I have it or do I not? Like, pick right. One. It's either there or it isn't.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different story. So when we talk about, mental health and the comorbidities that you have with it, and we've already talked a little bit about anxiety and depression, personality disorders, anxiety, 47% of people with ADHD have anxiety as well.
Yeah.
That's a pretty high morbidity or comorbidity. But 40% of them have oppositional defiance disorder, which I find to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I don't know as much about that. Tell me more about that.
So think about the kid in the classroom who argues with everything the teacher says and will look right at you and say, "I didn't do that," right when they know that somebody saw them do it. Mm-hmm. That's oppositional defiance. It's a lot of aggressive types of behaviors, argumentative type of behaviors, those types of things. Very difficult mm-hmm. for people who don't understand the disorder to, I would say, even say tolerate, because it's a very off-putting thing for a lot of people.
Right. So that's kind of like what I was talking about before with the personality disorders. They make you feel like you're crazy.
Yeah. Some other ones that are really interesting to me, like high comorbidities is autism. Like, they think mm-hmm. like up to 50% of people with autism have ADHD as well.
Right. And that's kind of crazy too, because like they can be so similar.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then substance abuse disorder. 20 to 40% of people have substance abuse disorders with mm-hmm. ADHD. And I think mm-hmm. it's higher than that. That's an old statistic.
And it's hard to get accurate statistics on that thing, on that type of thing too, because of the stigma that comes with it. People don't want to self-report on having a substance use disorder unless they're actively in recovery. Then usually it's a point of pride. But if they're in active use, they're not necessarily going to be 100% honest with you.
I'm sure that doctors get really frustrated with that too, with the fact that, you know, people aren't always honest with the substances they use, and then that makes their treatment mm-hmm. really complicated.
I personally, in my position, I have to do an assessment called ESPERT, which is assessment and brief intervention and referral to treatment. Basically, it's a brief assessment that says, do you or do you not use alcohol? Do you or do you not use drugs? And it's like those two questions. How many times in the past 12 months have you had four or more drinks in one day? Yes or no? Basically. And that kind of helps us weed out basically the people who are abstinent and would be considered low risk use from the people who would be considered high risk use to problem use or dependence. If they answer yes to those questions, that leads us into another assessment that we do with them called the Audit C or the DAST. And it helps us identify if this individual needs treatment or further resources, because a lot of times I think people don't necessarily know that they would have what would be considered a problem, quote unquote, right? Or would be categorized as high risk use. Your homegirl who's finishing a bottle of wine every night by herself might not realize that that's not good, you know? Until she goes to the doctor and they're like, hey, according to this assessment, you are in the substance use continuum of problem use. How do you feel about that? You know? So we're trained in how to have those conversations, and a lot of primary care offices use it. We use it just as a general tool to be able to treat our population better. They do have specific assessments for that.
So I'm curious whether you know whether these people also have ADHD.
Some of them I get to know well enough that I find out that they do. Not everyone I do. You know, some people I only see once or twice and then I never really see them again. And then some people, especially if they were answering yes to those questions, I see them frequently. I would have to estimate that there is a good percentage of them that also have ADHD, whether it's diagnosed or not. That's another part of the population that I work with is low income, rural, limited access to healthcare. So even if they have some of these mental health disorders, they probably don't even know because they were raised in families where it was normal. And they don't have access to the kind of healthcare that they would need to be able to get that kind of diagnosis and treat it.
So when you work with a client, what is your role with them when you work with them?
Well, it depends on the person. I can be a lot of things. I wear a lot of hats. So mostly my job is to get them connected to resources that already exist in the community. So we don't provide the resource themselves. So like we can't help people pay their rent or their utility bill, but we can help them find someone who can help them with that, right? We just happen to run into a lot of the times we're the first person this person has spoken to that actually gives a crap and has taken the time to sit down with them and be like, okay, so you need X, Y, and Z. How are we going to get that? Why haven't we been able to get that before? And how do we make sure that we can continue to get it? So if you need food, why aren't you able to get food? Well, I don't have a job. Why don't you have a job? I have to take care of my kids all day and I don't have a partner to take care of my kids for me. Okay, why? What about daycare? Well, I can't afford daycare. Well, there's a program through the Department of Health and Human Services that will help you pay for daycare so that you can go to work. Okay, well, I can't get to work because I don't have a car. Well, there's also a program that will help you purchase a car and I can give you ETRAN tokens so that you can get all around the county that we live in, you know, and that's kind of how it goes. We really delve into the person's history and what they need and try to solve the problem at the root. And we continue to work with them until they don't need us anymore.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation. So the long and the short of it is that there are a lot of mental health comorbidities with ADHD. So knowing that we have these things that often occur with ADHD and being aware that they're there is helpful to us because we're aware of the fact that maybe not everything can be explained away with your ADHD. There may be some other issues going on, right? But on the other hand, the importance of having a mental health professional do the diagnosing and work with you. And so what I'm hoping this conversation is going to do is encourage people to be active participants in their mental health as much as they are active participants in their physical health. Because we go to the doctor for checkups, we do all of those things for our physical health. A lot of people neglect their mental health. And so I'm hoping that people will take away from our discussion today that there's a lot of stuff floating around out there that needs a lot of explanation. And the best place to go for that is to your mental health professional. And that if treated correctly, most of this stuff is manageable.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge proponent of self-determination, which I'm not even going to go off on that tangent. We'll have a whole other episode about that.
Well, what is self-determination?
Self-determination is being your own care team.
Okay.
It's being an expert on yourself, understanding all of your diagnoses, understanding the medications that you're taking and why you take them. And, it's important that we understand our health and why we do the things that we do. And
So, Savannah, we've had a really great conversation today, and I so appreciate you being back on the show. I always love to hear about what you do at work and the people that you work with. Is there anything that you would like to add to the conversation prior to us signing off for the day?
Yeah, absolutely. If you need a mental health professional or a provider of some sort and you don't know where to start, a great place to start is with your primary care physician if you have one. They can give you lots of referrals to lots of different places for therapy, for psychiatry, all of that good stuff. If you don't have a primary care physician, great place to start is with your local community health worker. If you have those, if you're not lucky enough to have those, call your insurance plan. They can give you a list of providers in your area that accept your insurance, and then you can start kind of with that. They'll give you the referrals and you can kind of go from there. If you are struggling with finding a therapist specifically, a great resource is psychologytoday.com. You can put in all kinds of filters based on gender, specialty, hours, insurances that they accept, ages that they specialize in, all of that stuff, and you can filter through the therapists and find the one that's right for you. I am a big advocate for therapy. I believe it's very important. It's always been very important to me. It's also really important to recognize that the first therapist you meet might not be the best one for you, and you might have to try a few different people to find someone that's right for you. A lot of people who have been in therapy for a good portion of their lives, like myself, have been with some really bad therapists at some point. They're out there. You got to sift through them and find the right person. Don't give up.
Yeah, and what is bad to one person might not be bad to another person. You know, I
Absolutely.
mean, it also has a lot to do with personalities, and you want to have a person who you click with.
Yep, absolutely. So I encourage people to not give up if the first one doesn't work out.
It's the same thing as coaching. I always tell people the same thing about coaching. You know, try a few,
Yeah.
see if one works for you. So.
Absolutely. And there's no shame in that. And most therapists are going to be totally cool with it. If you go through like three sessions and you're like, hey, you know what? I don't think this is working out. Can you recommend me someone else who you might think better fit me as in my personality? They'll be happy to give you a referral.
Absolutely. Well, Savannah, that is great advice. Thank you so much for joining me today in this great conversation about mental health, about personality disorders, about comorbidities with ADHD, and more. I would say this was a really great conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Of course. And we'll hope to have you on again sometime.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure I will be.
Awesome. If all of our butterflies on the wall enjoyed the content or like what they hear, what should they do?
Like, subscribe, comment, share with your friends.
Hit that bell for
Hit
subscriptions, all the
that bell.
things. Do the bells, do the whistles. We want to get the information out to as many people as we possibly can. So thank you everybody for joining us today and being a butterfly on the wall with our conversation, and we'll see you next time.